Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Deadline City. We are your hosts. I'm Zoraida Cordova.
And I'm Danielle Clayton.
And today we are going to a very special location in Deadline City. We're going to the arena because today, what are we having? A battle.
A full battle. I have the pleasure of introducing my nemesis to the Deadline City group and world. It's the person that I always talk about as my nemesis, one of my closest friends, my resident troll. Jason Reynolds is joining us here in Deadline City today to talk about his issues with fantasy. And we're going to do a fantasy versus contemporary sort of war and discuss all of the issues. So I don't think I need to tell you who this man is. If you Google him, all the photos will come up, all of his work. He's written a gazillion books. They're really awesome. And yeah, Jason, thank you for doing this and coming on our podcast.
This is, first of all, this is the most clickbaity shit I've ever, like, we're not having no war, but okay. If you say so.
I appreciate that, man. I'm so happy because you're the only person that I know that is so has a lot of strong feelings about genre and about the craft of writing and all of its iterations in our business as well as an artist.
So the first thing I want to talk about though is how do you feel being somebody's nemesis?
Yeah, how do you feel?
For me growing up playing sports, there would always be this idea that there was a rivalry, but there can't be a rivalry if it's not on both sides. Danielle's not my nemesis, right? And so it's always weird that she's like, yeah, you're my nemesis. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not trying to do anything to stop you. I'm not a nemesis at all. If anything, I'm Danielle's biggest cheerleader.
Yes, biggest fan.
Yeah, she just don't know what encouragement feels like because sometimes it don't feel.
I think Danielle thrives in tension and in sort of like that spicy, like, you know, spicy back and forth.
Exactly.
So is this turning into a drag Danielle episode?
It's turning into therapy, but it is. We need to have it's therapy. You know, we need to figure it out.
Tell me your feelings.
Look. Roxane Gay has a nemesis. You are a lovable nemesis. It's just easier this way. And
you should have that for you. You're not my nemesis, though.
That's fine. You have probably another nemesis. But I think that in our podcast, this is your role. And we have our Deadline City bingo. And every time I mention you, it's on the bingo. So.
You know what the wild part is that I'm probably a lot of people's nemesis and don't even know it. I'm sure lots of people have a problem with me, and that's which is fine. But I think that, there are probably people who are like, he's my nemesis too, you know.
Mm-hmm. There are little kids that say that, but yeah, it's fun. It's an honor, I think, to be my nemesis, and I'm just so happy that you came on. I know. To let us roast you in this way, and to know just to really have a deep conversation about craft. And a deep conversation about how we tell stories and the types of stories that we tell. And you have a variety of types of stories that you tell, and they tend to land in the contemporary side of things. And I would love for you to talk about why you root your stories in the way that you root them before I start nudging you about why they don't have dragons in them.
First and foremost, let me say this. It's all jokes, but I do want to make sure for the listeners, I want to be very careful because we have sort of off the books conversations very loosely, but this isn't an off the book conversation, and so I have to be careful because I don't want to come across as self-righteous or pretentious because that's not my intention, or arrogant for that matter, because that's also not my intention. I don't know enough about fantasy I'm not shitting on fantasy. That's not, and I think it's always framed that way, but that's not what it is. I have questions about That's how Danielle frames it, which is really harmful for me, because not everybody's gonna see the sarcasm in it, right? There are people gonna be like, oh, Jason got a problem with fantasy, and that's just not the case. So first, I just want to make sure that we're clear on the rules here, that like it's not a real beef about fantasy, but it is an observation about my homies who are fantasy writers. And that's what it's actually about, right? So in terms of your question and why I choose to root things the way I root them, honestly, some of it just comes from my upbringing, right? Most of my partners who are fantasy writers grew up reading it. And I didn't, right? I didn't grow up reading anything. And I lived in a world that was, for me, it felt like everything you said had to be true. Everything about my upbringing was about, if you say it, you gotta mean it. The music I listened to growing up, which was rap music, was all about, if you say it, it better be true. Now we know later on in life we realized that it was all lies, right? But when I was a kid, it was posed to us as the truth, right? It was like the old people on the block. Whatever they said, you believe was the truth. My older brother, whatever he said was law, right? And so my whole life was built around this idea that there's magic in the world around us, right? And that I didn't have to sort of create an alternative to that magic. I just had to figure out how to put a specific lens on it so that it could ring like magic in a way that people hadn't seen it before. That's all. Black people are beautiful. And yet in movies for the last 50 fucking years, Black people have been poorly lit. And then over the last 10 years, Black people have been beautifully lit, and regular Black people have now become masterpieces on film. It's that simple for me, you know?
And something that you do in your work that I really love and admire is that you're able to take the things that are regular, that are normal, and imbue them with a sense of awe and wonder. And I think that is a wonderful thing. You don't have to add the dragon or the magical wand to make the neighborhood feel like it's so big and has so many different kinds of things living there that a kid could get lost in exploring your world. So, like, there is no shade on the contemporary side of things. I do think that contemporary writers and fantasy writers, maybe we might approach story in different ways. And I think that's the heart of the conversation that I really want to get at. And yes, I will clear your name. Jason does not hate fantasy. He just dogs me.
Well, so, I think people a symptom of not understanding, right? Like you don't understand why we do certain things that we do. And I think that in order for maybe like to enjoy it, maybe you just have to try writing some fantasy too. Is that something that you would ever even do as an exercise?
I think so. I mean, it depends, right? Because I've been learning that there's all kinds of different kinds of fantasies. And so I think it depends on what kind of fantasy we're talking about, right? Like, if we're talking about, like, urban fantasy, sure. If we're talking about high fantasy, as I'm learning, and the building of these other worlds and stuff like that, I think, here's the thing. Danielle and I talked about this recently. Do I think I could do it? Yes. Do I have interest in doing it? Not necessarily, but maybe I should try. Like you said, maybe I should give it a go. I will say this too. It hasn't always been this way, right? There was a time where I did laugh at fantasy or look down on fantasy. And honestly, it wasn't until I went to GeekyCon years ago when I was invited as like their sort of diversity guest. And I went to GeekyCon a long time ago and I realized that like, I completely was misunderstanding a thing that I had never given a chance. But if it had saved thousands of children's lives, who am I to say that there's nothing right about it? There's clearly something right about it. If there are legions of children from various backgrounds and physical abilities and mental abilities and all these things all coming together to celebrate this thing, clearly I'm the one missing the mark. So it's not the stories that bother me. It's just the way the stories are told. That's all.
Okay. I was there at that GeekyCon. I remember that. Yeah, it was in Orlando.
They asked me what a Patronus was, and I was so confused. I was like, bro, this is a children's event. We talking about tequila? This is crazy.
No, it was the greatest event to see Jason be like, what? They're like, what Hogwarts house are you in? And he's like, huh? What is
Ray, what is your Patronus? Tequila? I was like, wait, what?
Patron. Oh my God.
This man, let me tell you, that whole weekend, he was like, I don't know what's happening. I have no idea what's happening right now.
It's very confusing.
It's also hard because if you want to get into fantasy, the biggest properties are so white and exclude. There's no Latinos in Hogwarts, right? Like, not even a Spaniard. and so, like, it's hard. I guess I understand what you mean when you say, what is the entry point, right? So I don't know. But I do think that. Something that you said about telling the truth, that's what magical realism is in the Latin American construct, right? Growing up, my grandmother would tell me a story. The reason why my grandfather could fish is because he made a pact with the river spirit. And that's why he was the only one who could catch fish. And to her, that was the truth, right? And if I wrote it in a book, which I did put in a book, it's magical realism because we accept this magical thing as a truth. And I can't disprove it. And I can't say it's not part of my world because it is. But then it still falls under fantasy, even though it's a strain of Latin American magical realism.
See, and that's I rock with it. I'm writing magical realism right now as a writer. I don't know if Danielle's told you, but I'm literally writing like a real magical realism story right now. I'm calling it. It's fabulistic, right? Depending upon who's reading it, it's magical realism. You know what I mean? And it's rooted in the real world. And it's just about this. That there are truths in the book that are not explained. They just are truths in the book that are magical. I'm not averse to, like, that's my jam. Magical realism makes perfect sense to me as a Black American.
You know why? But also because it's a bunch of people.
What'd you say?
Because it's literary.
It is.
So I think that's also why, because there's a difference between, you know, people when they want to praise my work, they'll say, oh, you're writing magical realism, one, because I'm Latina, and two, because I'm writing fantasy. But they also don't want to say, oh, you write genre, right? So I think that's also why I have, I've resisted the title and I've resisted writing magical realism for so long is because of that. It's because sometimes people opt to say magical realism versus, oh, just fantasy. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's that literary aspect of it. And I know that you're not, like, snobby about it, but that is a very real thing that we as Danielle and I as genre authors will have to contend with all the time.
Absolutely. Do I get to call my book fantasy then?
You can. We'll see. I need to read it first.
You need to read it. You need to read it. And then don't give him any crowns before.
No, the war's over. Now I'm a fantasy, right? That's it.
No, Zoraida, what have you done? What have you done? What have you done? What have you done?
You don't laminate your fantasy card right now.
That's hilarious. Danielle would be sick if this joint came out and they were like, Jason Reynolds writes a fantasy novel. Boom, top of the charts. We out of here, baby.
She's so mad. And he would probably text me every, like, headline that said it to.
His
publisher will send the New York Times framed charts to you instead of him.
To me. And I'll wake up to a text that says, this is Jason Reynolds, the New York Times bestselling fantasy author. Hello. How are you? Good morning.
I'm number one. Cassie Clay, number two. I'm number one, baby. I hate you.
But it's interesting because I wonder, as you're dabbling and dipping your toe into the land, like, if there are buckets, right? Fables, folktales, legends, and fantasy sort of exist within a bucket in different little pockets, but it's across the line, right? From contemporary. It's contemporary adjacent, what you're doing. And I wonder what you're finding difficult, because I know we talk about fantasy a lot. And you do. You give me a lot of credit for, like, making up full worlds and having to think about systems of magic and, you know, all of that stuff. But how has it been to sort of stay in your lane, but start veering out of it a little bit.
It's like speaking, Spanglish. You know what I mean? It's like, right? It's almost like, except not being born as bilingual, but speaking Spanglish, but it's like being in the middle of learning a foreign language, a different language, and then incorporating that different language into the language that you were born with, but not being fully versed on the new language, right? And that creates dissonance and a little anxiety. So like what ends up happening is I'm eggshelling, trying to figure out, well, I want to do this, but I don't want to do too much of this because I still want to be me, who I am on the page, but I needed to be some of this element because of what I'm trying to do with this, with the piece of work. But I don't know all of the things that y'all know, right? So I'm just kind of like, my hands are in front of me as I'm sort of pushing through the dark, looking for the wall or something to hold on to. And that's what it feels like. Fortunately, I had, you know, writing Spider-Man was a help. Right. Because for me, I mean, Danielle, you know me, like for me, I'm super like up here is a lot going on up here in my mind. But also it takes a lot for me to suspend the idea of that. Right. Like I live in a very real space all the time. Right. Even when I'm pushing for imagination, my world is always very sort of tangible and real. And so it was hard writing Spider-Man because I had to have him do Spider-Man stuff. And it took a while for me to not feel silly about that, right? Luckily, I had Long Way Down where I could sort of incorporate the idea of something that was, of the occult, right? Something that seemed otherworldly or that may have been ghosts or, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been inching toward this book after book over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, and I'm just learning, and I'm trying, and I don't know if it's going good. I might be missing, right? But I'm trying.
I just wonder why you think it feels silly to you. We have this conversation about imaginations a lot, and I wonder if we can discuss the imagination of the contemporary writer versus the imagination of the fantasy writer, and what are some of the constraints? What are some of the, you know, some of the things that allow some of us to tap in to a completely different vein and create dragons and magic, and other people create magic in the regular. And I wonder, like, about our imaginations and if they are actually fundamentally different.
I think I have an implicit bias, and I think I have there's something subconscious there, right? Honestly, and if I'm being completely honest, I think that there's something in me that feels, I don't know, it feels it like when I see other people do it well, I'm like, yo, that shit was brilliant. But when I think about it apart from the author, when I think about it apart from the book, if I would have plucked the components of your magical story out of it and you would have just tell me this is what happens, this is what is happening in this sort of world that I'm building, it's hard for me to not see it as goofy. Not because it's actually goofy, but because there's something implicitly biased about stuff like wizards, right? There's something about wizards to me for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because when I was a kid, we seriously, like when I was a kid, we would have laughed at the kids who believed in wizards and like wanted to like wave wands around. Like I went to Harry Potter World with Veronica and all of them, and they all were like buying wands. And I was like, yo, we like almost 40 and y'all buying wands and stuff.
We're 40.
Some of us are almost 40. And I'm like, I don't understand why y'all spending all this money on wands. It feels a little strange to me. Like, I don't know. Like, it just does. Is that right? Absolutely not, right? This is a bias. And I think that I think that's a part of it.
And I wonder about, you know, your child self and if you were given the ability to see yourself as a wizard. I mean, we're adding to the list. Jason Reynolds hates dragons. Jason Reynolds hates wizards. Like, we're just adding to the list.
I don't hate wizards. I do hate dragons, but I don't hate wizards. I don't hate wizards.
Did you hear him say that?
I hate dragons.
I don't know, but do you hate the idea of dragons because they are a creature that was probably confused by a really large lizard, and so the people in these ancient, you know, European countries were like, "Oh no, a dragon!" Or do you just don't like the way that they're used in a very similar way all the time? What is it about them specifically that doesn't connect?
I don't like the fact that dragons are a cliche that everybody pretends aren't a cliche. Dragons are cliche, and at some point we're going to have to admit the fact that dragons are cliche. And there's no other time in a writer's life. Like, all of us have been trained the same ways in terms of, like, the things to avoid, right? Number one, avoid the cliche, yet everybody leans to the dragon as if it's not the biggest cliche maybe in the history of the epic fantasy, and everybody continues to use it. That's all.
Because they're cool. They breathe fire. They hoard gold. They can shapeshift. When I was a teenager, one of my favorite books was called Dragon's Bait. This girl who gets kidnapped by this dragon, and then they fall in love. And I don't remember if, like, she was with the dragon. She had to have been with the dragon when he was in human form, not when he was in dragon form, because that would have been weird. But I was fascinated by the idea of this girl falling in love with this mythical beast. And I'd never seen a story like that before.
I just want to make new mythical beasts.
I'm making new mythical beasts.
Tell him about your book.
I have a middle grade novel that I'm writing that everyone on Deadline City is not going to know about. It's called The Scourge of Land and Sea, and it's about a family that hunts monsters. But instead of killing the monsters, they return them to the place where monsters were born. But I'm making my own mythical creatures. So it's all like cryptozoology, but instead of like chupacabra and all these things or the Jersey Devil, I'm going to make up new ones that are going to be weird.
That sounds amazing. So my issue isn't with, and this is what I was saying earlier, my issue isn't with fantasy. My issue is with the fact that
regurgitating the same stuff.
That's what it feels like, right? It feels like to me that everyone is leaning in to the same exact things over and over again.
I think that there are, like, if a book is specifically about a dragon, that's different. Like, there are no dragons in my fantasy books. Are there mini teacup dragons in your book, Danielle?
They're tiny.
Okay.
he hates it. He hates it.
Right.
They're like wee little big teacup dragons.
You're creating those dragons for a very specific reason, because the princess wants to bastardize that magic, right, to create mythical beings. So that's a specific use of that. But do you feel this way about regular literary fiction? You know, like, okay, then that's fair. Because I was
gonna be like, hates everything, and that's one thing that I love about.
Because, like, not every literary book is going to be great. You know, sometimes I'll start reading one and I'm just like, nothing has happened for 20 chapters. What's going on? And that's my problem. Facts. But then it's like, oh, here's a Pulitzer, you know? I just don't understand. I'm like, am I dumb?
How feel no. On the other side of things when our stuff is never, it doesn't get awarded in the same way. It doesn't get the prestige. It doesn't get reviewed. We're over in this other bucket. Just, and they're like, oh.
It's movies and you guys get rich. That's all. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for you.
I hate you. This is mine. He's my
medals. Oh, really? You want medals? Cool. I'll give you my medals. You give me your check. Put me on TV in the movies like you. What are you talking about? Like, cut it out. Like, just ridiculous. Like, do I think that there's trash on all sides? Yes, bad literature is bad literature. It's everywhere. And I argue against the cliche in every, Danielle, you know this, in every single category, I push against the cliche. Even myself, right? I get mad at the moments that I've fallen into cliche in some of my books where I'm like, ugh, I shouldn't have done that, or I should have pushed myself a little harder. And that's the reason why I get so frustrated, is because I actually believe that fantasy writers are basically the titans of imagination who refuse to push themselves past something like a dragon. That doesn't bother y'all? It drives me crazy.
What dragon book are you talking about? Okay, you have to name. Okay, no. I can't.
This is what
think,
he argues with me about all the time.
I talk. Okay, there's Game of Thrones. There's Game of Thrones. There's The Witcher. There's Harry Potter. I can't think of, like, major properties that have dragons. Like, even Percy Jackson doesn't use them.
Really? You can't think of any our entire pop, if you ask anybody about what a pop culture fantasy trope is, anybody, even people who don't read it, they're going to be like, you mean like dragons and stuff? That's what everybody says. Everybody's gonna say that. You know how many book covers got dragons on it, Tarita? Don't even get me started about y'all book covers. This is a whole other thing.
My book covers are not like this. Danielle's are not. There is a book coming out, which I'm excited to read, and it's about a championship, like a horse race, but instead of horses, it's dragons. But it's also dragons from around the world, and it's written by a Puerto Rican author, which is why I'm expecting the understanding between myself and the book is like, you're going to change dragons somehow. You're going to make them different. You're going to show me how the rest of the world uses them, right?
And I think
there has to be room. There has to be room for like reinventing things. We were just talking about this, like how do like people of color take something that has been used over and over and over again and make it our own, right? In a space and that we have been.
I know what Jason's about to say. I'm gonna tee him up. Go ahead.
To be fair, I feel you. I'm with you. But my pushback is what we always say, what we always do is how do we make it our own instead of how do we make our own? That's all I'm saying. It's always how do we make this thing ours instead of saying how do we make our thing? And so I don't care about dragons around the whole world. I care about whatever is specific to Puerto Rican lore, making a monster out of that. Then I'd have been like, hey, that's fire, some sort of Boricua something or other. That, right? Then I'd have been like, no, that's fire. You see what I'm saying? That's my biggest argument. It's like, and y'all are the ones with the most expansive imaginations. But I think that, and this is my presumption, and it's probably wrong, but because I talk to y'all all the time, and I know so many of y'all are so trained and so read when it comes to this stuff, and so educated when it comes to it, I think there's stifling there. Like, it's like, you know the history of fantasy, and it's like, I don't want to break a mold. Whereas I believe, right, and I don't know if you listened to the thing I sent you, Danielle, about Ali Smith, and she says, how do you approach a novel? And her response was, with a hammer, right? Like, that's how I feel.
Okay, and I don't think you're wrong. This is something I talk to you about a lot, and it's this idea that Zoraida and I are writing into a tradition and to readers that have expectations, and I want us to talk about that. So the contemporary reader versus the fantasy reader, I do feel stifled. I will admit that. I feel like readers come to my work in the fantasy space with wanting certain things, and I feel compelled to give those things to them, whether it's a certain type of light and darkness and a good villain or a certain type of plot. Remember, we just did the hero's journey, and you and I have been talking about issues with the hero's journey, Jason, and you were like, why does it feel like a sort of a plug-in plot? Mm-hmm. And you're right, because I could teach someone how to do a fantasy plot. Will the world be any good? Maybe not, but I could unroll a map of how to do a typical fantasy novel versus contemporary folks. I don't feel like they have the same constraints. I don't think your readers expect nearly as much of the same things from you.
I think that's where I disagree, because I think that all readers, all books to me, in order for them to be successful, have to have the most basic element, which is take a character from point A to point Z, and the only way to do that is to introduce new things along the way that keep moving something forward, right? Forward movement. That is the only thing that we have in common in all of our books. And I think that you can tell a story without the Blake Snyder beat sheet and without the hero's journey. But the hero's journey to me is specifically a journey of change, and that's why I use it as a sort of map. Sometimes I can't find every single thing in the outline in my books. And I think that's fine as long as I'm still moving forward to reach that ending. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't think, look, I think that Joe Campbell was a smart man. I think he I also think that he wasn't a genius, just because I think that what he realized was what everybody else was already doing, right? Yes. I was telling Don, it was already there, right? He was able to see that there was a through line and mm-hmm. sort of these stories and plot it in a certain way to make it palatable for everybody else. I don't have a problem with it. I think the hero's journey is actually a brilliant story structure. I just think that so many of us use it as the Bible. And I'm saying that, like, for me, as somebody who, and this is where we sort of, Diana and I always are arguing, is because I believe in art. I believe in Ali Smith, right, approached the novel with a hammer, right? Or I believe in the idea, I believe in style, right? Another Ali Smith quote, right? Style is not the ghost in the machine. It's the life that disproves the machine is there. I'm saying, like, that's the way that I think about my work and what I'm trying to do. And so when it comes to, like, what young people want to read and what our readers want to read, I'm not worried about what they want. My job is to convince them that they want what I've given them. And I think we don't, and for my fantasy homies, it's like, no, we can't take that risk. Right? We can't do that. I put out a book of short stories. You know what they told me, Danielle? You know what they told me, Zarada? They said, every editor at Simon & Schuster, don't label it short stories because no one wants to read short stories. No teacher, no parent, no kid is going to pick up a book that is just a collection of short stories written by a single author. And the book did wonderfully. And it's working in a different way. When I wrote Long Way Down, they were like, yo, are you sure you want to write it? Right now, Kwame Alexander's holding that space, blah, 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 blah. We got Ellen Hopkins holding that space, blah, 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 blah. Are you sure you want to do this? I'm going to do what I want to do, if it makes sense to me. Like, and I just want to see my partners with all this imagination do the same. That's all I'm...
So you think that fantasy lacks structural originality? In terms of the basis, because it has a lot of great magic and a lot of great world building, but you think structurally the way we tell our stories feels a little stale.
And the only reason I feel this way is because a fantasy reader told me this. And that was the other thing. A fantasy reader was like, yeah, at your signing, Danielle, at your reading, do you remember this? And I was like, I asked the lady, I said, first and foremost, why is it that fantasy novels are so long? Why can't y'all figure out how to, why they all feel so bloated? I don't know.
My first, the first third of my novel could be a Jason Reynolds book. Not even, like, two chapters, because, like, I listened to Long Way Down an audiobook, and you have a very lovely speaking voice.
Don't be nice to him.
I hate you. But you still have forward movement and you're playing with style, and there are fantasy novels that play outside of structure. N.K. Jemisin wrote an entire fantasy novel in second person, which to me is like, no gracias, but she still did it and it still worked for her, you know? So
N.K. Jemisin is brilliant, and I wait for y'all to do that.
I don't like you.
Waiting for you to come meet me up here.
Exactly. You see what I have to deal with? You see this?
But are we even trying? This is what I'm saying. Why not just risk it? And Danielle, I'm trying my best not to put all your business out there, because we've talked about this and we've had very candid conversations about why it's not being risked. That's all I'm saying. Why haven't we got all these brilliant fantasy writers? How come we ain't got a fantasy novel in verse yet? Because it seems like it would be genius if y'all could figure it out. And guess what, Sarada? I tried to do it. Danielle knows. It was a 600-page book in verse, and it was all magical, and all kind of stuff was going on. It had the journey and all this, that, and the third.
I read the whole thing. It was good.
And they couldn't publish it because they said it was for adults. So they were like, we can't do nothing with it, right? But my thing is, it shouldn't be on me. That's yours. Why y'all not? Nobody's even tried. Help me understand it.
When you say that, like, I literally clench my entire, my body clenches. Because the idea of trying to do world building via poetry just feels like an insurmountable task.
Sammy Grant
first. But it's only because of how you're but this is a bigger thing, right? Because it's the only reason it feels wow to you is because of how you feel about poetry.
No. I haven't seen novels in poetry, but there are journals like Uncanny and Lightspeed that do publish fantasy poems. And I wrote a fantasy poem short story, like a short story poem about a zombie apocalypse.
Oh God.
Also, nobody wanted to publish it.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, like, I'm not saying that this is easy, nor am I saying that it's even reasonable. All I'm saying is, why not try to be unreasonable? That's all I'm saying. Like, why not push yourself or just
attempt? Have so much to lose. Like, I think that, one, there are things like the comfort of knowing that this is why people read romance, right? Romance, thrillers, all of those procedurals. I turn on Law and Order, and I know exactly what I'm going to get, right? I don't need them to change that structure specifically because I'm going there for that. And there are a lot of fantasy books that are experimental and weird and not for me. But then there are others that are like, this is a comforting, I want to go into this big world and follow this hero along this journey and see weird creatures and meet these mentors. And I still expect it to be different, but I want the trappings because I want to live in this fantasy. And that's why one, fantasy books are so long, because I want to live in it. I want to experience it and smell and taste and do all of these things and be right there with the hero.
You see his face? That is.
Don't do that. Because I'm with you. No, this is what the young woman told me at Danielle's signing. She said that very thing. She said, look, the reason that, she said, yes, I know exactly what's going to happen in all these books. She's like, but I read it because I want to live in the world. And my thing is, for me, that's hard for me. That's all. She's like, I can expect that there are certain things they're going to have. They're going to be monsters. They're going to be the journey. There's going to be these things getting in the way of the journey. We're going to get here. We're going to go there. There's going to be all these things happening in the world. It's going to be expansive. And I just want to be there and breathe that air for a while, as long as possible. Three books. Give me three 500-page books. I want to really steep myself in the world. And I'm like, cool. Like, if that's what it is, then that's what it is.
So you don't want to come into these worlds, Jason? You don't want to come live in these worlds? You love your real world? That's like...
It's not that at all. It's just that if I come into the world, I want the world to feel... I want to be surprised by what the world has for me. I don't want to know.
That is the function of the author, right? That is our challenge. People that are reading my new book, Incendiary, they're like, I thought I knew exactly what this was going to be, and then I got to the 30% mark, and you didn't do the thing that I thought you were going to do. And I think that that is our job as authors, is to also take the tropes. And the only way we can surprise readers is by doing exactly that, right? And when I wrote Labyrinth Lost, the expected thing for me to do was to choose a certain, like the love triangle, whatever, right? To choose a specific person. But in knowing what the YA tropes and expectancies are, I went against it to surprise the reader, and also because it was right for my character. But that is our job. And if somebody doesn't do that, then that's also lazy. That's not to say that, like, just because a book is fantasy that it's good. There are lazy fantasy books that I can't read because, like, it's just the same stuff all over again. But the ones that I'm in search for are the ones that give me a new world with those trappings.
That's absolutely fair. I just always wonder if I'm always curious. And I, like I say, I got a preface at the beginning of the conversation. I'm not read enough. I'm not read enough to argue with any sort of substantiality.
I will give Jason Reynolds a book list. He will not read it, but we will work something out. We will give him a fantasy for beginners.
Books be too long, yo. I can't spend all this time.
Handle it.
You know, the tour.com, Tochi has a Riot Baby that's like...
Oh, yeah, Riot Baby. I'm going to read Riot
Baby. I think you would love Riot Baby. You would love Riot Baby.
And also, speaking of that, can we talk about I just have so many questions about this stuff because I feel like we, and Danielle's argument is I write my books for a very particular group of people. Cool. I think that's absolutely, I'm with you. I always wonder, and this is why I'm always pushing against my friends who write fantasy, specifically these big sort of, you know, brick books. I'm always like,
brick books.
What you? I mean, they're literally like door stoppers. I mean, you guys are literally writing tomes. You guys are actually, okay, Zoraida, you got one. But for the most part, come on, you know I'm telling the truth. Y'all are writing, I mean, these things are like, sheesh. Old lady Bibles, you know what I'm talking about? Grandma Bibles, the big ones. That's what y'all are writing.
How dare you.
It's true. And I just wonder about all the kids who desperately need those books, but who are underliterate. I always wonder about it. And I wonder if y'all ever think about the fact that not every kid has the literacy to read 500 pages. And that there are kids who desperately need that escape who just don't have the capacity to delve into your dense, epic, 500, 100,000 word book. And nobody's talking about it. No one's even having a conversation about those kids. The kids who really need to escape, by the way. A lot of those kids are the ones who are like, I desperately need to figure out how to get out of here. And there's nothing they can do because because of this huge barrier to entry of the fact that y'all only make massive books. Some of you, most of you, make massive books.
That's a failing of the industry, absolutely. Because I can just grab all of the books that I had from the 90s that are fantasy books, and they were like a Nick Stone book, Nick Stone size book, right? Mm-hmm. Like 25,000-30,000 words. Yeah. And that's what books were when I was a teenager. And then slowly we have erased paperbacks and we have erased the shorter fantasies. And I think that is a failing of our industry. I don't know where we start doing that.
I'm always going to hold y'all accountable. I don't care what they do. Honestly, Zoraida, I don't care. I don't care what the publishers are doing. Mm-hmm. Publishers told me that my books weren't supposed to be published, right? Like, I don't care what the publishers are doing. Ultimately, my thing is, are we even writing it? That's what I'm saying. Like, if the publishers ain't publishing it, we can look fine. But are we even writing it? I mean, I talked to fantasy, my homies, and they're all like, yo, I got to make sure the book comes in around 75, 80,000 words. Like, it's like a thing where I have to make sure I hit this amount. Why? Or you could be like, nah, I'm going to go ahead and put it at 40,000 words and see what happens. Let's see if I can get it down to 40,000 words. And let's see if I could use Octavia Butler as a comp. Because she was doing it at 40,000 words. Here's the comp book, right? Here's a comp. And I'm going in with this comp. So y'all can't tell me. I have proof that this can work. Kobo Abe, right? Japanese brother from back in the day. Kobo Abe wrote 20,000 page books. I got them over there on the shelf. I read them joints. What'd you say?
It's a novella.
Fine. I mean, look both ways. Look both ways is 25,000 words. Look both ways is 25,000 words. Why aren't we writing novellas, fantasy novellas, so that young folks can really bite down on it and really be introduced to this whole world that they're missing out on?
Yeah.
It's on us. Come on. That's on us. We got to own that.
And also, I think that fantasy writers have to talk. We have to talk to our publishers and our agents, because in all of my contracts, it has a word count of between 65 and 95,000 words in every single contract I have, Jay. Like, honestly, it's in there.
But you know why?
Why?
You know why? It's because if they can put you at that amount of pages, they can put you at a different price point. Like, it's just business. So at the end of the day, I would my books don't cost what your books cost.
Right.
It literally boils down to business. And my thing is, if your agent is like, look, that's not what they want to make. We don't want any limit on page numbers. Like, strike the clause. That's all. Strike the clause. Why not? We do everything else. We fight for everything else. But when it comes to this kind of stuff, why not strike the clause? At least give y'all some opportunities to try something new. Y'all laugh when I talk about writing a novel in verse, but you know how many kids would read it? New kids, not your fans, right? Not your fans. New fantasy readers. I might get a new Spider-Man book. I shouldn't talk about it, but I'm a new Spider-Man book. And if I do, you don't think I'm going to try it? You know how many readers we get immediately into a world that they wouldn't have been interested in?
Mm-hmm. Fine. Okay.
I want all of the publishing industry people who listen to our podcast to start challenging themselves. And maybe this is a new wave, right? We can call it Nathan Reynolds style.
JR style. JR style fantasy. We'll make our own... Or our own new thing.
I just want to say, if we look, we have these debates all the time. We argue about the differences or the non-differences between genre and literary. We argue about the bullshit hierarchy that is always seen between genre and literary, which I believe is unfair. I think it's unfair that you're not considered for awards. I think it's unfair that you're not considered for all these other things. I think it's unfair. It's nonsense. In the same way, I think it's ridiculous that I can't seem to sell a movie to save my life. I think it's ridiculous, right? All of it, I think, is sort of this weird sort of muck that we've created, that the industry has created, that affects us all. But my challenge is, just like when it comes to like Kirkus, right? Everybody's mad about Kirkus and everybody says, well, Kirkus doesn't, when every time Kirkus reviews me, Kirkus Jerkus, they trash me. But at the end of the day, children's writers and young people's writers, we fight about wanting to be respected like adult literary writers. And so when we get reviewed like them, we moan and groan, right? When's the last time you've seen a children's writer get trashed in the New York Times? They don't. And you know why they don't? Because they're being reviewed by children's writers, right? But when's the last time you've seen adult writers get trashed by the New York Times?
Every single Sunday.
What I'm saying is that we have to play by a goose and gander rule. It's got to be goose and gander. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, which means if I get to... it basically means that what's good for me is good for you, and what's good for you is good for me, which means if I can stretch out and do whatever I want in these books, you should probably try to take a swing. Why not? In the same way that I'm trying to incorporate fantasy in my work and try to see if I can take some of your things and put it in there and stretch this and stretch that, why wouldn't y'all just swing the bat? Why not?
And that brings me to thinking about trope. You and I always argue about tropes and the use of tropes. And you're very anti our formulas, right? You're like, oh, here come your plug-in plot. Oh, it's a trope. It's a cliche. And I just wonder, there are so many readers that love and come for the trope. And I wonder how we're able to do new things, but also, I don't know, keep remixing things that we know work and are beloved.
I think that's sort of what we have to figure out. I don't even think we're trying to figure it out, though. And what I'm saying is, let's try to figure that out. Let's figure out where the middle ground is, because I also wonder, I feel, I mean, this is me speaking as myself, and because I can't speak for everybody who's writing lit fic. I can't speak for, like, I don't know what everybody's doing or how they feel about this kind of stuff. I'm a little obsessed about everything when it comes to, I mean, Danielle, you know, like, I'm like, it's super serious to me, right? I probably take work a little too seriously, right? And I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to some of this stuff. And I recognize that. And I know that that's not the only way, right? Everybody has their way. And all books exist in the world. And they should exist in the world, however they're being told, whatever, right? It's all good. I'm just saying, I wonder, like, all right, we take something like Stamped, right? You take a book like Stamped. Stamped's not supposed to work. It's not supposed to work. Right? It's supposed to be a textbook. That's what it's supposed to feel like. And it doesn't. And the only reason it doesn't is because I decided it so. I tried something else and it worked. And now it has the possibility of bringing people into history who would have never touched history. And people who love history, it's still their book. We can do it. We just won't try to do it. And that's my problem. My issue isn't with the stories y'all tell. My issue is with y'all.
you see what I have to deal with? I'm
honest, because how could you have the imagination of a million people? How could you have the imagination to build world after world after world and still be cowardice? And that's how I feel. Like, just be honest with you, because we're having a war. I feel like, how could you be brave enough? How could you be brave enough to build whole worlds and magical systems but yet not be brave enough To push the industry on y'all book covers, which y'all pretend to like, but I know y'all don't. To push the industry.
You're not wrong. Come on. Fair.
It's just wow to me.
Well, I think that what has happened throughout the years is, you know, we have been sort of conditioned to, as writers, that we can't fight back and we can't question the higher ups, right? Because there are only so many writers, because Daniel Jose Older does this all the time. He's like, this doesn't happen to me. And I'm like, but also you're a guy, right? Like, you can fight back in a way that I probably can't, or somebody won't listen to me. So we're also like, we also have to think about that, right? Like, as a woman writing in YA fantasy, my books are expected to look a certain way, and I am completely shut down by art departments and so-and-so departments and people who are like, oh, we don't have any more budget for your to try another cover, so congratulations, this is what you have, right?
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
What do we do in those instances, right? If we hit a wall.
I think, look, so in all, and I'm glad you brought this up, because the truth is that I recognize that, like, I am speaking from a certain place of privilege from being a male, privilege from being successful, right? Like, all those things are very real, right? And I don't want to discredit any of the other sort of obvious elements in this conversation, which are the fact that you all are women of color at that, all of which plays its part. But for those of us, for the women in fantasy who are successful, All they have to do is turn the corner, because they have leverage. You know why they got leverage? Because at the end of the day, it's a bottom line business. This is not a philanthropic situation. We're talking about business, and they're making millions and millions of dollars for these companies. And so they do have the leverage to do what they want, to try things that they want to try. And that trickles down to you. The only reason I get to sit here is because of Walter. Walter was the one who gave me an opportunity, because of the books that he wrote and the risks that he took. He gave me an opportunity to do the work that I'm doing. So who exactly is it N.K. Jemisin? Well, she writes on the adult sector, right? Who is it in the children's literature world that y'all should be tapping, like, hey, let's push it? But my question is, even if with the opportunity, would you even do it? Because is it something that's even on your mind? Because no one's having the conversations about where is fantasy going? Where is it going? And lastly, I'd like to say that Danielle says this all the time, and I think it's bogus, is that somehow you all have also drank a poisonous Kool-Aid that allows you to believe that you all aren't artists. And you are. You're artists. And if you're artists, then push the line.
I mean, I do say that. I say this for framing. Right. I say that I don't feel like an artist. I say this.
Clean it up, Diana, for your audience.
Oh, I'll clean it up.
Well, because I'm an artist.
I don't feel like an artist. I say this to Jason all the time. I don't feel like an artist. Not in the way that you're an artist, Jay. I just don't. I don't feel that I have that connection. My work is not treated in that way. It's treated in a way that makes it sort of like, not saran wrap meat, but like, that's a bad example, but
cotton candy.
Yeah. Like cotton candy, and it's manufactured, and it's plastic wrap.
You're the person making it.
Yes. Like, but I'm talking about when it leaves me, it's treatment. It becomes cotton candy. Versus your food, when it leaves you, is like a gourmet Michelin star meal in the way really, that it's packaged, the way that it comes out. That's
Danielle does not like those Michelin star restaurants with a little tiny, it's like a bowl of sand and a little tiny piece of meat at the center. Like, no,
I hate it. I'm a peasant. I'm a peasant from farm people. Just put some meat on a fucking board with some vegetables and, like, let me go. Like, don't put pea foam and shit on my food. Like, I don't need all that. So I do think we have to recognize that, Jay, in the way that our work is treated differently when it hits the marketplace.
Yeah, but I'm not interested in what, like, that's none of my business. I'm interested in what you're doing, what you're making, how you feel about it. I say to you that you don't feel like an artist, and you say to me, it's because the way they treat my work. No, what do you think about the work? What do you think of what you make? Hey, where's your sort of integral core when it comes to the thing that you're making? And are you willing to put yourself in deep enough waters to be afraid and to believe that you can't actually make it? If it don't scare you, what is the point of making it? What's the point? If you don't, every book I'm writing, I feel like I'm not going to be able to write. And if it ain't, if you ain't shook about what you're making, then you're literally creating just commerce. And if that's, and that's okay, by the way, just admit that is what I'm saying. It's just that, and just say it, right? Like, that's a different conversation. And it's fine if, look, romance novelists, they're important, they're incredible, they deserve all of the, they have a purpose, right? But they also understand what it is that they're doing. They're providing a particular thing for a particular purpose. And if that's what it is that you're doing, then cool, like, make that be known. That's just not what I'm trying to do. And that's okay too. We all have different paths. I just want to know who are the artists in the fantasy world who are like, yo, I'm trying to turn this thing on its head. That's all.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I have to give it a lot of thought to think about that distinction. I do think some of the work that I create is purely commercial, right? And then some of it has more of me in it, the bones of me, which would be more to the art side.
I can respect that. Like, that's honest. Like, I'd rather, because the truth of the matter is that I think sometimes if all artists had that moment where it's like, either I gotta eat, so I'm gonna make this for this, or I'm gonna make this for me. That's a real conversation that we'll be trying not to have. But like, I don't want you to discredit the fact that you're an artist unless you don't feel like you, if you really feel like you're not an artist, that's fine. But I don't think there's anything wrong with sort of feeling like I want to make a thing that changes the way we see the world. It changes the way we see the thing that we're making, right? Like fantasy novels. Like, why not try? We argue about Marlon James and about whether or not Marlon James's latest book works or not, right? And I have my opinions that I will leave off the podcast because he probably gonna find out about it and be mad and I'm gonna hear from him, right?
Don't get me in trouble too, because I have a lot of feelings.
But what I will say is I respect him swinging a bat. I respect him swinging as hard as he could, whether it works or not. Sometimes it's a swing and a miss, but I just respect him for trying. Allie Smith books don't sell in America, and every book she writes is completely different than the last. I respect her for just trying to do something.
This is what I deal with, but also, like, not everybody is equipped to tell a specific story, right? So right. How do we make room for these authors to write these crazy speculative new fantasy worlds, new things, new everything, when publishers to this day, if you look at Publishers Marketplace and Publishers Weekly, the announcements twice a week, it's still the same plots, right?
Yeah.
How do we get them to buy the other things and take chances on other things?
Right. I mean, I think it's complicated, right? And I think, look, we're speaking, obviously, we're literally sort of pie in the sky, right? We're just having a conversation that I don't necessarily have all the answers per se, but I do think that we have. Look, the industry is whether we like to admit it or not, the industry is changing slowly, but the industry is changing, right? And we never talk about the advancements because it's so much easier to talk about the things that aren't changing. But the truth is that we are seeing shifts. You know, we're watching shifts happen. We, Danielle and Nick are doing this whole thing every day. And so far there's been two, three black fantasies, you know, that they've been talking. Like, that was not the case 5 years ago. Right.
You're right.
I look at like Nick, Angie and Tiff in that class. And how it was just like this onslaught of all these books. That was not the case when I got in this industry. Right. Like, everything is sort of shifting slowly but surely. And I think at some point we'll get there. I just hope that when it's time, we aren't afraid to say, I want to posit this. Look, I got a book on the shelf right back here called Nothing by Jan Teller. Jan Teller was I don't think they're writing anymore. Scandinavian writer, wrote a book about existentialism. Shit came out in like the early aughts. Won the Prince. Right. About existentialism. It's a weirdest, strangest book. And all I can think about is, we just don't do that anymore. Like, we just don't take those kinds of swings where it's like, how can I? And then and when I say we, what I really want to say is black and brown people aren't doing it. Because when I think about what M.T. Anderson and Eugene Yelchin did with that book, yo, we ain't, who taking them kind of risks? Right? Like, where you going chapter for chapter, one chapter's in words and one chapter's all illustration, right? Who can do it? Gene Luen Yang. He can do it if he wanted to. He could figure it out. Like, we can do it. We can do it.
Do you think that we are afraid because we've been boxed in, because it's been hard for us to break in on either side, that we take that path? The path already has rocks and it has holes and it's already stressful. So we think if we stay the course that we can get to the finish line, but if we decide to do or deviate, that it's not going to work. I feel like there's a lot of fear here to do something new.
I think there's a lot of fear too, but I wonder. I think, look, fantasy and fantasy novels. At some point, a long time ago, there was a first, right? Like once upon a time, there was a first, and somebody had to take that swing. And so, all I'm saying is, I don't know if we stay the course or if we deviate. I'm just saying something got to give. And honestly, I think that the real issues have to do with the way that we talk about our work in general. I think that we do it. I like to blame the publishers because I think we have to look at them for who they are as gatekeepers and as a sort of a system and institution that gets to make certain decisions. But I also make sure that I keep onus on me and onus on us because we have to do that. We got to hold ourselves accountable. And so the problem that I'm having mostly is that is the way that we frame the work that we do. This idea that there's a literary work and a commercial work, and that most of my homies who write fantasy are put in this idea that it's commercial work, and that commercial work means you get commercial editors, and commercial editors don't edit y'all the same way that a quote unquote literary editor edits me. And by the way, that is true, right?
It's true.
So why not? So my question is, why not just one time pay for an outside editor who's a literary editor to see what would happen, just to see how they what they could catch, what they could see, how they could clean up some of it if it needs cleaning, because it doesn't always need that. I'm not saying that, right? But if they could figure out ways to shift the structure, to figure out ways to sort of expedite the exposition of these books, which are sometimes outrageous to me, just to be honest with you. You have to build a world. But I don't understand why you can't build a world in the midst of the plot. Why front load it? I don't want to read all this about the dragons and how the dragons came to be.
Oh, we're back to dragons. We are full circle back to dragons.
I don't care about orcs, elves, trolls, and dragons. I don't care.
I have dedicated my next book to Jason Reynolds, and in it there is a shade on this very thing here. You heard it here. He dislikes dragons, and I can't wait for you to ask him all the reasons why. Are there any fantasy worlds that you like that you would want to visit that you find intriguing or interesting enough?
I also, you know what movie I like? I mean, I know we talk about books, but another movie that a world I could live in, and it's kind of a cheesy movie, but Where Dreams Come Back. Where Robin Williams goes to heaven, but the heaven
that
is
one. Yes. Yeah,
but the heaven is a heaven of his own making, so it's all made of paint. Yo,
have you watched Pan's Labyrinth?
I've seen some of it. The fish movie, the dude who did the fish movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh God, yes, here we go. Here we go.
I think that you should try to watch it again. It's really creepy and beautiful, and my work with your fable.
Oh, I check it out. So, like, I'm cool with all of it. Like, I'm with it. I think that people are gonna listen to this and be like, "Yo, Jason is such a dick," and that's cool. Like, I'm with it.
Truly respects it.
What I'm saying is, I think that what y'all do is so brilliant that I want to see how far it could stretch. That's all I'm saying. I think that. And Danielle asked me, do I think I could do it? Yes, I think I can do it. Do I think I could do it like y'all? No, right? I don't think I can do it like y'all. And I think it would take me a long time to develop the muscle to do some of the things that you all are doing. I don't have the education to understand how magic systems work. I watched Holly Black give a lecture one time that blew my whole mind, right? I have a lot of respect. I'm just asking the question when in the literary world, quote unquote, literary fiction world, they always say, what is the future of the novel? And my question is that, what is the future of the fantasy novel? And if you all are asking yourselves the same question, that's all I'm saying. And it can't just be more black and brown people.
That question all the time, because Danielle and I are always thinking about how to level up, right? Because we can't level up if we're just writing the same book all over again. So we do ask ourselves that question.
It's good to know.
He doesn't believe. And
is the answer associated with content? Because I feel like it's always going to be a content thing. It's going to be like, what we need to do is, I'm sick of the fact that we don't have a Black Hogwarts, so we got to make a Black Hogwarts. What we need to do is we got to figure out how to make a Latinx version of Middle Earth, and we're going to call it, you know, like, it's always and this thing.
No. Exactly. But it is about content. It is about content. But because I'm not going to write a 700-page poetry book. Nobody wants to read that for me. Nor do I have any interest in writing that. But I do like playing with structure because the way that we look at books is really interesting and really cool, right? We have to spend all this time with this thing in our faces. But structure is another part of the content because they both should play a part.
And I've never played with structure, and that is something that I want to challenge myself in doing with another fantasy book. And I'm from watching different shows and reading books that sometimes the timelines are like not exactly linear. And I got that from just reading a lot of contemporary fiction. Shut up. I hate the fucking Witcher. I hate that damn show. Jason, she's obsessed with this fucking show called The Witcher on TV because it has Henry Cavill on it and he grunts the whole time. He's a dirty white man and he takes his shirt off. That's the only reason why you watch that show and it's the only reason you made me watch it. Either way, in that show, there are diverging timelines and you can't really, you have to figure out the clues until everything comes together.
You don't get that there are three timelines until the third episode.
Right. And so I want to challenge myself in my fantasy to think about time and timelines and even think about if we look at Tiffany Jackson's Monday's Not Coming. I read a lot of contemporary that plays with form and plays with time. That's something that I don't know if I'm good at, but that is a stretch that I would like to try to do in my next big thing. Cool. Is play with time.
I just want to make sure it's on record. That's all. We got our own record right here. Because this is from I wouldn't be such a pain in the ass if I didn't have so much respect for y'all. And I think that people are, I'm always nervous about, because I can be a little terse and I recognize that, but it really is coming from a place of respect. There are books that I've read where I've been astounded by what people have been able to do with language. I believe in the alchemy of language, right? And so where so much presence and so much sort of, weight is on, like, all right, I need to tell the hero's journey. Me, it's all about, like, look, I want to tell this story, but I want to use the alchemy of language to tell this story and not just lean, right? Which means I want to figure out how to put the right words in the right places to bring a world to life instead of having to literally spell out an entire world. Right. And some people see that as cheating or really, I think it's the harder thing to do is to go in and figure out what exactly is the right concoction of words where I could tell 10 pages in a single paragraph. We watch Min Jin Lee. Min Jin Lee does it in Pachinko. Min Jin Lee does it in Pachinko.
Isn't Pachinko also a big book or am I making that up?
Pachinko is a big book, but it would have been a bigger book if she told the story of like three generations. And like five pages. And it's brilliant the way she did it. And so I'm trying to figure out, are we still sharpening our tools? I don't know everything. I don't know much of anything. But I do know that every single book, I want to make sure that I'm pushing the line forward. If not, I just don't know why for myself. Because I know sometimes it's just about good storytelling. I think that's fine, too. Tell a good story. A good story is for some people. For me, though, I believe in the old adage that there are good storytellers and there are good writers and they're really the same people. And I'm trying to make sure that I'm counted in that number. So, right? And in order to do so, I got to challenge everything. Like the hero-villain bifurcation,
which we talk about all the time. Oh, my God. He's been arguing with me about villains for like 2 or 3 weeks now. And he listened to our villain podcast. And he's just like not into the villain. And I just really, I feel like Jason could write such a dynamic and very cool villain or anti-hero. And that's what I would like to challenge him to do, but he doesn't
I mean,
like villain thing.
It's not that I don't believe in villains. I just don't believe that people are the villains. That's all. I don't think that it has to be human beings who are villains.
It could be systems.
It could be systems.
Jason loves a good system as villain.
Well, what I actually love as villain is insecurity. Like, that's what I truly love as villain, right? Like, I don't like heroes either, right? That's why I like Wendy so much, because I don't like heroes and villains. I don't like that, right? I believe, like I told Danielle, I believe in the journeyman. I don't need to be a hero or a villain. I just need you to be a journeyer. I don't need there to be this sort of, like, I'm the person who saves the day, because those people, one, I don't want to read about that guy, that or that person, that woman. Who wants to read about the person who saves the day? Nobody likes that person, right? And I don't want to read about villains because I don't believe they actually exist. There aren't many villains, and like there aren't many truly bad people. Even if the villain believes what they're doing is right, which is what the argument is, right? It's like the villain doesn't believe they're a villain. The villain believes that they're actually the good guy, and the line between hero and villain is so thin, so forth and so on. Exactly. So if the line between hero and villain is thin, let's just eliminate it.
Let's just throw out the rule book. I mean,
Jason is not a rule follower.
Exactly. Let's throw out the rule book. Why not?
Jason is anti-rules. I wish I could have his mother on this podcast too, to talk about him as a child and whether or not he followed the rules of her house, and like if that informed him and his hatred of rules and boundaries.
Well,
I would love to talk to Miss Isabel.
My mother would tell you that he was respectful, and if I told him something, and he disagreed, he'd tell me he disagreed and he challenged me, but he'd still be respectful, right? And that's why I'm so sort of, I'm a little like on edge a little bit, and why I keep sort of reiterating is sort of like, this is coming from a place of respect. It's not sort of being dismissive or being, I'm not trying to be like mean about it. It's not that at all, because the truth is I can't ever do what y'all are doing, right? Maybe not, honestly. Maybe that's not a possibility for me. I just want to see all of us be dope as shit. I just want everybody to be great. That's all. I really do. And I want to make sure that when they tell the story about us, right, that they tell the story of people who weren't afraid to shake the table.
And you want, and you think fantasy. And I agree with you that we could shake a little more. We could take a few more risks. We could really flip a lot of the things that are standard, and push ourselves. And in contemporary, I would love to see you guys infuse magic.
But the thing is, Naya, is that I think a lot of us, first of all, I'll say this. I think maybe a butler changed the world. And then everybody was like, well, that's that. Glad she did that for us. Let's settle in, right? It's interesting, right? Jackie told me years ago, Jacqueline Woodson told me years ago, that because I went to her and I told her that I was grateful for the work she'd done in helping me get myself together in this industry, and that I would never be able to surpass the things that she's done in her 30 year run in this game to really change the landscape. Love her or hate her, she changed things for a lot of people. I mean, books about queer parents and stuff like that, we didn't see that kind of stuff, especially Black people and all this, that, and the third, right? So she changed this whole landscape. And her response was, it's disrespectful to say something like that, because she said, if you think that's a compliment, you're sorely mistaken, because I didn't do all that work for you to not pass me. Your job is to pass me, to push it forward, and to do it in half the amount of time it took me to do it, right? Like, that's the charge. And so for me, what I'm saying is Octavia Butler has done it. And I'm saying, and we could argue that N.K. Jemisin has done it, right? I mean, she's made history. And so why not be like, all right, well, who won't take it from here and push it forward, take it even further? And in terms of like contemporary writers writing magic and stuff like that, I agree with you. I think, look, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of us who don't take no risks either. There's a lot of us who are like scared to death of doing anything that might be a little strange or a little off the cuff. But I also know that we also have models of people who have done it if we would just pay attention. I mean, we have the great Toni Morrison, who put magic in everything.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Everything has magic in it. We have all the folklore of the past. We got black folk tales. If I'm speaking specifically as a black person, we have black folk tales. First of all brown cultures have folk tales, right? We all got our folk tales and our lore. We have all the things there, and they're all rooted in sort of they're all feet on the ground stories with magical elements. So we have all that stuff. It's just a matter of like being unafraid to try something new. That's why I'm trying something new now. I'm probably gonna crash and burn. I don't know if I'm going to get it right, but I'm damn sure not going to try.
So that means that there will be at least something dragon-like in this next work? Can listeners expect a dragon?
There will be something that is giant. There will be a giant. There will be mythological things happening in the book. Yes.
That's all I want, okay?
I'm very excited. How long is it?
It's going to be the length of all my books. I'm not writing over 40,000 words.
I challenged him to, like, a writerly duel. Like,
that's
I literally
NaNoWriMo, bro.
I know.
That's not even a NaNoWriMo.
but that's the thing, right? I believe that's just how I feel about writing in general, though. Like, all my books have a tight scope. That's how I feel about, that's just the way that I process, that's the way that I approach literature in general. You know what I mean? Even the books that I read are between 40 and 60,000 words. It's just my way of doing it. But yeah, my book, I can't, right now it's at like 13 or 14,000 words, and we're definitely not going to go over 40, 45 max. Like, there's just no reason to.
I want to read it.
I'm going to send it to you. When I finish the draft, I'm just going to shoot it to you before it come out. You can put your eyes on it. You know what I mean? I have no problem with it. You know?
And I hope one day, Jason Reynolds might actually write a dragon. It would just murder me. It would be the coolest dragon ever. Maybe
he might just name it Danielle.
I hope he does not do that.
I would never write a dragon, though. I would never write a dragon. I would never write a dragon in the way that I would never write a wizard.
But you said you would be a wizard. You'd be like a little cute black wizard.
Can't do it, yo. It's been done. Why? Why waste my time and energy? It's been done a million times.
I'm trying to think of any other fantasy world where we could put Jason in it that he could survive or enjoy himself. And I just don't know. I feel like he'd be like, I'm ready to go home. You know what I mean? Like, where's the portal? I'm ready to go home. Where's the portal?
Let's build up a new section of the Shire, the East Shire, with all the Latino hobbits and the black hobbits. That's where we'll go.
He's too tall.
They couldn't be called hobbits. I had to change. I couldn't call them hobbits. I couldn't call them elves. I couldn't. And I know all these things are very real things. Like, after watching Holly Black, I was like, oh, the fairy thing is like a real thing, like, you know, and dating back to a tradition in history that's not mine. Yeah. That's not mine. So I'm not doing that. That ain't for me.
I'm going to put Jason in the land of like the Haints or something like that. We'll do the Haints.
I could do the Haints. That's real.
He'll be like haunting folks and shit. You know what I mean? Like, I'll do that. We'll keep it black. We'll keep it South.
I'm with whatever's dope, whatever's fresh, whatever's new, whatever's trying, because nothing's new, but whatever at least is trying to take a new swing, even if it's at an old thing. That's all I'm arguing. I'm not against it. And when I do, and the crazy thing is that, all right, so we make this bet about whether or not I'm going to write this, that, and the third. And what about you? What about y'all? What's on your side of the bet? What's the stakes for you? You know what I mean?
I'm going to try. I'm going to try to play with structure and to play around with the way that I reveal world building details, because your challenge is interesting to think about. Why do we use so much exposition as one of the fantasy crutches that we have in the genre? So I'm going to try to see if I can tell a story in a different way, not completely linear, and also to think about scope and to think about trying some new ways to reveal world building in a faster, shorter way. I'm going to see if I can hit 40,000 words and tell one complete fantasy story.
I always think about that in my fantasy, is that I don't write things for the sake of writing and for the sake of like being in a place, because when I, one of my first writer teachers was a poetry teacher, Cornelius Eady. And what? He used to say, yes. He was a teacher at the National Book Foundation writing camp, which obviously I was super cool. And so Jackie Woodson and Cornelius were both instructors in there. And he used to say to trim the fat of your poem. But I have always kept that advice on all of my fiction. And I always look at sentences like that. So that
if he's getting too happy.
But my book is 450 pages, but I also think it needs to be that length. All of my other books are 90 and less. But yeah, like I do that. That is something that I've always kept with me, is that advice from Cornelius, is like trim the fat. And that's what I think about.
You don't need all these words. We don't need all this extra stuff. Just put the words that we need on it. We don't need it. Like, look, I truly feel this way. And this is, and honestly, some of this stuff is the way I was trained. Like, you know what I mean? The way that I was sort of brought up, because I was poetry was my original discipline. That's the way that was how I was educated and reared and socialized and come to literature. So I feel that some of that is coming from this bias. But I really believe that it is only in literature where people could be lauded for bloating, right? Like if you're a musician and you're playing a song and it's your turn, the drummer is playing the beat, just the notes that he's supposed to play. If he solos the whole time, he's not a good drummer. If you're a painter, right? It's the same thing. If you're a sculptor, the sculptor is literally chipping the stone just to get to the bust. He ain't just chipping all over the place. It's like clean, boom, boom. If you're a potter, it's only in literature that we're like, nah, nah, man. Just who cares? Just write. Give me three pages about this tree. Really? We don't.
That's how I feel about literary fiction. That's how I feel about literary fiction. Oh, look, this is a carpet. It's blue. It's symbolic. Here's 10 pages on this carpet. That's
why it's related to an impotent in life. And
that's what I expect when I go into literary fiction. That's why I like don't always pick it up.
Yo, that's because that's bad literary fiction. But if you're reading good literary, if you're reading this, right, there's no fat in this book. Zero, right? Look, you could even read, Hemingway wrote 20,000 word books. No fat. And he wrote short, clean sentences. No fat, right?
Only Fitzgerald. Racism, homophobia, Fitzgerald. And anti-Semitism.
That's not what we're talking about. That's not what we're talking about. Don't deflect. You know what I'm saying? Don't deflect. Fitzgerald wrote 20,000 word books. Alice Walker, The Color Purple. The Color Purple is like 35,000 words. The Song of Solomon, Sula, like 40,000 words. Toni Morrison, Zora Hurst, As We're Watching God, 50,000 words. Tanya. Literary fiction.
I hate it. And I just wonder, I mean, you're not wrong. We use a lot of words and we're masturbatory with the amount of words that we use. And we can all do better to trim the fat on both sides. And I hope that the contemporary people take from fantasy is make some shit happen. Let's fucking go. Let's get gone. Let's go. And like, if we can give you some gas, we can trim and you guys get some gas in your tank so we can get to the meat and potatoes of what is going to happen. So there are things to learn on both sides.
I think it depends on what the intentions of the books are. So I agree, right? I think that some contemporary fiction novels, like we struggle with plot and pace, right? Even though I think pace is another issue in the fantasy world, but neither here nor there, neither here nor there. But plot is not an issue, right? That's your jam, right? And so I think you're right. I think contemporary fiction could take some notes from plot and pace. But I will say that the difference with contemporary fiction, specifically contemporary literary fiction, is that we're given the room and the bandwidth and the opportunity to turn the novel into what we want the novel to be. And so some of these novels are actually just sort of explorations of the human experience, right? Like what is the human condition? And that's what the novel is about. And that the novel has to, this is Brendan Kiley's whole argument. Because we used to fight about this all the time, about Teju Cole's Open City, which nothing happens, right? And he's like, that's not what the novel was meant to do, right? Now, is that your jam? No, it's not your jam.
No.
You know what I mean? But just remember that it takes 100 pages to understand anything happening in Beloved. 100 pages, right? And she was sort of given that room, and that, and no one's going to argue that that's not a brilliant book, right? But so like with us, that's the difference, right? Like, we're given opportunities that you all don't feel like you have. And I'd actually be more curious to see that, like, what happens if there's more depth in the character and not so much weight put on the plot. That's why I love Wendy so much, the movie Wendy. Has she told you, Zoraida, that I've been obsessed about Wendy, the movie Wendy?
Yeah, she doesn't know. I don't be running my mouth, Jay.
You gotta watch Wendy. I've watched this movie probably like every day. And
what?
It's the story of Peter Pan. It's new. It just came out. It's the story of Peter Pan, but Peter is a little Antiguan black boy, and Wendy is there, and her friend, you know, James and Duggo, and that whole, you know, that whole thing, and they get to Neverland. It's a whole thing, but it's nothing like. It's all about sort of like the intrinsic values of these people and these characters. It's brilliant.
It's character-driven. It's moody as fuck. It gave me nightmares. Like,
it gave you nightmares?
It did. There was something about it that is very childlike, but also disturbing on a level. And when you watch it, you'll see what I mean. It really roots you in this debate between, this is a movie that fantasy writers could sit down and talk about and contemporary writers could sit down and talk about and take away two different things from the film. Yeah. I was arguing with him for hours about this.
It's all I'm trying to write. Like that movie, if you want to know what I'm working on as a writer, watch that movie and you'll know exactly what I'm trying to do. Because that movie does everything I'm trying to do. Like, shout out to the guys who did Win. I think it's the dude who did Beasts of the Southern Wild. It's that dude who did Win. Yeah.
We'll link it in the show notes so that people can go watch it. But when you watch it as a fantasy writer and reader, you're expecting certain things, and then it goes left, and you're like a little bit fucked up by it.
There's no magic in it.
There is no magic, but there's still an ethereal, otherworldly, like, magic that is happening, but it's not overt, and it's all about character. Versus I'm like, oh shit, the plot, right? And I'm expecting things. So yeah, it'll be interesting for you to watch it. And maybe we do a debrief, Wendy special episode with Jason Reynolds come back. And we just talk about Wendy.
Wendy, watch it, Zoraida, and then let me know what you think. Even if you don't like it, I'm just curious, do you at least see why I would? You know what I mean? Why I would bite down on it. You know what I mean?
Knowing him and knowing how he writes. And I think the contemporary writer looks at that film and sees something different than the fantasy writer.
Write both, so I'll be interested. I'm interested to see what you guys mean.
Yes, exactly. And we were so grateful that you got to come and talk to us and argue with us in our fantasy versus contemporary world, and that we could have some of your time to do this deep dive where... I'm just so happy we got to talk about craft. We got to argue about genre stuff. Whereas I do feel like as the three of us, as people of color, we're often not asked to speak about the actual mechanics of the things that we do. We're often supposed to talk about just all of the heavy stuff of what it means to be us. And I just love that we were able to argue about these things. And I really hope one day we get a book with a dragon in it, or even a map. If I was so upset that there wasn't a map in Look Both Ways in the front, that I might even have one commissioned, because he's such a hater about a map. It's a neighborhood. You could have a map.
That would be really cool.
I don't want no maps because it takes away from what the reader does. It literally strips that opportunity from the reader. I don't want a map. Like, I feel like, let the reader, like, if I'm doing my job, the reader should be able to see it. Why would I put a map on it?
The reader should absolutely see it. But also, it's just an addition, like a bonus to your world, right? It's like, oh, look, this is what I mean. right? This is. I'm gonna experience the life of my character.
Exactly. I'm gonna challenge kids to draw me a map. They're gonna win something, a map of the neighborhood, and look both ways.
Guess what you couldn't do if there was a map? That. If there was a map, you couldn't create that kind of dope moment for these kids if there was a map in the book. Like, no. Why would you rob them? Like, no, guys. I don't. No map for me. Good for y'all, but no map for me.
That is a no from Jason.
Right. No dragons, no maps, no powers, nothing. Hey. See, this is my nemesis, friends. And
thank you so much, Jason, for joining us and talking, shooting the shit.
Yes.
Thank y'all for having me and for letting me get on here and holler and scream. To all the listeners out there, I love my fantasy homies. I'm not against any of it. I want them. I love it all. I'm glad that they're here. I want them to get the respect they deserve, honestly.
So I think the takeaway from us is that, which is what something that we encourage all the time, is for writers of all areas, all genres, all backgrounds, is to keep pushing.
To stretch. That's all.
Not be afraid to do something different. Like, I literally have that tape in my head. I'm like, oh, I want to do this thing. Jason would say, go left.
She does do that all the time.
I do. I really do, because I don't want to hear your mouth. So
we all need accountability partners. You know what I mean? We all need accountability partners. Let's all stand on the edge. That's all. Let's all stand on the edge.
All right, everyone, that's it for this week's Deadline City. Tell us what you think. Who do you think won in the arena for fantasy versus contemporary? Make sure you check us out on Patreon or Ko-fi. Say hi to us on Twitter and on Instagram, and just let us know if you're enjoying the episodes and what you would want to hear for season 3. We have one episode left for season 2, and then we're going to take a couple of weeks break. Thank you once again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Deadline City is part of the Frolic Podcasts Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.